Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the USA Hockey conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, there will be a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the conference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Mr. Dave Fisher. Sir, you may begin your conference.
Adrian, thanks very much, and good day, everyone, as the hockey weekend across America officially kicks off today. And what a fun way to end our series of teleconferences this week with three giants in the hockey media world, Kevin Allen, Mike Emmerich, and Eddie Olchuk. And in just a moment, we'll hear from each of those, and then, of course, take your questions once we're done. Today's theme of hockey weekend across America is wear your favorite hockey jersey, so we hope you're all proudly displaying that jersey here in the USA Hockey National offices. We've got Michigan Tech jerseys, USA jerseys, Colorado Avalanche jerseys, among many others. And it's a great time to get people talking around the water coolers about our sport by wearing whatever your favorite hockey jersey might be. Tomorrow is Bring a Friend to the Rink Day is the theme, and then we finish off on Sunday with Celebrate Local Hockey Heroes is our three-day celebration of the great sport of ice hockey. I've asked each of our three participants today to talk a little bit about their favorite hockey memories and their journey to date, and also to share with us in conjunction with Sunday's theme who their hockey hero or heroes are. It's my pleasure first to introduce Kevin Allen, someone I'm sure you're all familiar with, is in his 23rd year as the lead hockey writer for the USA Today. Authored many books, including USA Hockey, a Celebration of Great Traditions, and of course, Kevin, the president of the Professional Hockey Writers Association. And this time, I'd like to turn it over to Kevin for his remarks. Kevin, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Dave. You know, my career actually started right after the 1980 Olympic gold medal success in Lake Placid, but, you know, I've written so much about that through the years and through the different anniversaries that a lot of players there who are participating in it, I think I was there because I've covered the sport so long. But actually, my favorite American hockey memory involves the 1996 World Cup team with, you know, led by guys like Mike Modano and Tkachuk and Doug Wade and Billy Guerin. And because I had just started my career at USA Today, I got to know a lot of those guys when they were teenagers. And at that time, I was also writing a book, as Dave alluded to, about the history of USA Hockey. And because of that, I sort of got on the inside of that. And I think that's, when I look back, it's probably one of my fondest memories because I had never been around a group of guys who were so dedicated to the single pursuit as this group was. I mean, they had a great leader in Chris Chelios and tremendous players, and Brian Leach and the Hatcher brothers were, of course, involved in that, and Mike Richter. And, of course, they were all brought together by, you know, Ron Wilson, who, you know, had sort of suffered as an American in the NHL. In fact, I remember his speech before the tournament started. He came out and he said, okay, you know, what are each of you willing to do to be successful? Because, you know, we know Mark Messier will run Brian Leach. Is Brian Leach willing to run Mark Messier? And then he talked about sort of the prejudice against the American players through the years. And he said, you know, and if I may use an analogy, you know, it wasn't like we were riding in the back of the bus. I was so far back, I was in the luggage compartment. And when they had actually won that tournament, I remember his speech afterward, what he told the players is, okay, you know, no longer are we in the back of the bus, we're driving the bus. And it was just a tremendous, I guess it was just the most fun that I've ever had covering everything, just because I've never seen a group that was so happy. And in terms of hockey heroes, you know, because I grew up in Detroit, it was easy Gordie Howe. And I still remember going down, excuse me, to Olympia Stadium. And even though I didn't see Gordie until he was in his mid-30s, he was still such a remarkable player. And I think he just fueled my appetite and my love of the sport. And, you know, still to this day, even though I've covered tremendous players like Wayne Gretzky and Mario Lemieux, I think Gordie was probably the best because he was the only player was the best in all categories. In addition to being the top offensive player, he was tremendous defensively. Even into his 40s, he was a great defensive player. Of course, we all know he had a great physical presence. But even though I would say he was probably a reason why I learned to love the game of hockey.
All right, Kevin, appreciate it. Thanks very much. Next, we have Mike Emmerich, and there is nobody better in the broadcast world in the sport of hockey than Mike Doc Emmerich. We're pleased to have Doc with us today. Of course, you know, he's received the NHL's Lester Patrick Award in 2004 for service to hockey in the United States, and just this year the Foster Hewitt Memorial Award from the Hockey Hall of Fame, and a great pleasure to have Doc with us today. Doc?
Thanks very much, David. Excuse me, I'm fighting a head cold here today. Kevin and I have the same wavelength on a couple of things. And I know Mike Richter's performance in that World Cup in 1996 in the huge third period by the United States stands out in my mind for a long time. There was one U.S. memory that I had on a team that didn't win the gold, but certainly went far beyond what any other group thought that they could. In 1992 in Albertville, it was a bunch of college guys, and it was Coach Pete, it was Dave Peterson, and they had a goaltender named Ray LeBlanc and a collection of guys who were brought together, and it looked, as they looked down the road, that maybe amateurs weren't going to be coming into this tournament that much longer. This is our shot, and boy, did they ever make the most of it. They were picked to finish about eighth. They had an old defenseman named Mo Mantha who played the entire tournament with a broken foot. He wasn't going back to the States. They said, you can go back and have it set. And I remember the day of the bronze medal game, he had his foot in a bucket of ice, trying to keep the swelling down so he could get his skate on. And Ray played marvelously. One of the three finest teams I've seen in 35 years was the unified team, because most of those guys, with the Iron Curtain dissolving the year before, were going to come into the NHL. And Ray and his boys went up against the Czechs for the bronze medal, and they lost in that game to Robert Lang and his team. Finished fourth, but boy, were they ever an exciting team to follow. And one other memory that I just cannot overlook, and there was a coach's speech similar to what Kevin had talked about with Ron Wilson. It was in Nagano, and it was the morning of the gold medal game in the women's competition, and Ben Smith had his entire team gathered around him at center ice. Team Canada, their big rival, had already had their morning skate. A couple of the players who weren't going to play and one of the backup goaltenders and a couple of assistant coaches came out. But the entire U.S. team was out for their skate that morning. They were gathered around Ben, and it was very quiet, and we heard him very quietly talking to the players on the team. And occasionally there were chuckles, and at the end there was some applause and some banging of sticks on the ice. And then the party broke up, and they went back to practicing their shots and so forth. And Ben came across to meet the media, and John Davidson and I both happened to be there at the time. And John said, I know a lot of this is privilege, but can you share with us some of what you were talking about out there? Because it seemed like they really were paying attention. He said I gave him a golf story. And the story was that in the years when I wasn't very good at playing golf, I would be on the green, and the person I was playing with would be on the green with our shots. And he would be away, and so he would have his first putt, and I would just pray that he missed it, because then that would take some of the pressure off me. I wasn't very good. Then as I got better, if he was away and I was on the green, I'd hope he made it, because if he made it, then I'd have to make mine, and it would make me better. And he said, that's the status that you are at today. Canada has been handing it to us in various international competitions, but you're better than they are. And now you're the team that can take this game tonight and win the gold medal from them. And it turned out that that's exactly what happened. Sarah Teeting made a big save in the last 45 seconds or so of the game, and the puck came to Sandra White, and she put it in the empty net, and that was magic for a lot of young ladies who had played on boys' teams just to get a chance, and then eventually it became an Olympic sport for the first time that year, and they won it. I think the thing, too, is the people that Kevin and Eddie and I have crossed paths with just by being around this job for a while and being able to do it. I mean, we've met Bob Johnson and Herb Brooks, and in the second generation, Mark Johnson, who will coach the women this year, and Mike Eaves, and Snooks Kelly and Jack Kelly, and, you know, Laviolette, Neruzioni, and Granato, and Shelley Looney, and the Christian family, and the Jensens, and the Suitors, and the Patricks, and all of the others. But when I was at Bowling Green in school, and I hadn't begun this career yet, it was 1971, there were six United States-born players playing in the National Hockey League. Craig Patrick was one of them with a team called the California Golden Seals. And it wasn't that long ago, at least I like to kid myself until I look in the mirror and check my birth certificate, that it wasn't that long ago. But so much about USA Hockey has changed during that time. And I think that my hero is someone who is really unnamed. It is a coach, male or female, any coach in any little town or large city has volunteered to work with kids. Johnny Van Beesbrook, the goaltender, was once a bubblegum-blowing kid playing for Little Caesars in Detroit, and he had a coach that was a volunteer. Even when we had a lockout and Pittsburgh had a coach named Eddie Olchek who had time on his hand, he coached Nicholas's team in Pittsburgh. Anybody that gives time to kids, that's my hero. Male or female, girls' team, boys' team, whatever. That's it.
Thank you very much, Doc. Most appreciated. And we wind up, certainly last but not least, not only has become a media giant, but also a giant on the ice surface as well. Of course, I think you all know Eddie Olchek played for Team USA in the 1984 Olympic Games 4 times. He's been a member of the men's national team, represented the United States in the World Championship, and, of course, played over 1,000 games in a wonderful career in the National Hockey League as well. And now into the broadcast booth with guys like Doc Emrick. We could not be more pleased as well to have Eddie with us today. And, Eddie, please go ahead.
Well, Dave, thanks a lot. I really appreciate the opportunity and to be on with everybody and admire the work that Kevin has done over his career and get a chance to work alongside him and be interviewed by him. And, of course, now I get the humbled opportunity to work with Doc on a weekly basis and makes my job really, really easy. And you're not going to find two bigger supporters of the greatest game in the world, especially here in the United States, than Kevin and Doc. And I'm thrilled to be on this call with everybody. I couldn't be more proud to have grown up in the city of Chicago and played the greatest game in the world under USA Hockey. And all my amateur hockey I played in the United States. I left home when I was 16 years old to play Junior B hockey and to pursue and to play against better players at that time back in 1982 to go up to Stratford, Ontario and play Junior B hockey. But, for me, the biggest impression had to be the 1980 team. I was 13 years old and when they were able to beat the Finns and win that game against the Soviet Union, that was something that I wanted to do. And I didn't know how you did it. I didn't know how somebody would find you, but my goal was to be an Olympian at some point. And at that time, I was 13 years old. And I never thought in my wildest dreams that 4 years later I would get that opportunity and that challenge and that impossible dream to try to duplicate what happened in Lake Placid in 1980. I mean, we could only equal what that team did. And everybody knew who we were in 1984. And for me, it really started back when I was 13 years old of knowing what I wanted to do and where I wanted to go. And to get a chance to represent my country at 17 years old, and I was in 1983, in the summer of 1983, July 4th is when Lou Vero and his staff picked the team to represent the U.S. In Sarajevo, 7 or 8 months later in February in Sarajevo in 1984. And it was on July 4th that he named that team, and he named it alphabetically. And when he had heard, he'd gone me through the list, and he had said, Eddie Olchek, I couldn't believe that, 3.5 years after watching that miracle on ice take place, that I was going to be a part of trying to duplicate and equal what that team did. So for me, it was the 1980 team that made an impression, not only me as a aspiring American-born hockey player, but, for the rest of my career of just knowing that, that's what it's all about, is that you put your mind to it, you can achieve anything with given the opportunity. And I've had many coaches through my amateur career, through the Olympic team, through the Canada Cups, through the World Championships, to get a chance to play in the National Hockey League, work alongside a guy like Craig Patrick, who was very instrumental, work alongside Herb Brooks when we were in Pittsburgh together, to get a chance to know Bob Johnson, to grow up in Chicago and watch the great Joey Mullen play for the hated St. Louis Blues, being a Blackhawk fan. For me, those are impressions that will be with me, the rest of my life. Two guys that I really that were heroes of mine and guys that I idolized growing up in Chicago were Bobby Clark, believe it or not, of the Philadelphia Flyers. I playing as long as I did, and I tell people this story, they said, "You didn't play anything like Bobby Clark when I played in the National Hockey League." But I love the way that he competed. I love the way that he take face-offs, and Bobby Clark was somebody that I really admired as a player, and learning a lot about him and knowing that was a diabetic and dealing with the disease diabetes, to me was just something that made a lasting impression on me. And the other one was Tom Lysiak, who played for the Atlanta Flames for many years and then became a Chicago Blackhawk. And when I was a young boy, I sent a letter to the Chicago Stadium and told Tom Lysiak that I was a big fan and hoped to play in the NHL someday. And he turned around and sent a picture back to me, and it was stated, "To Eddie, hope someday we can play together, Tom Lysiak." And sure enough, 4 years later, in my rookie year in Chicago back in 1984, I was dressing in the same locker room and playing a couple shifts with somebody that I grew up idolizing. And it's been a great, fun time as a player, getting a chance to coach in Pittsburgh in a great city like Pittsburgh and representing the Pittsburgh Penguins. And also, too, is I had the opportunity to be the head coach of the under-18 team for Team USA a couple of years ago, where we took some boys over to the Czech Republic and played in the under-18 tournament in the middle of summer, and that was something that I really thoroughly enjoyed. And USA Hockey's done a lot of great things for a lot of great people, and I'm certainly indebted for everything that I have today.
Eddie, thanks very much, and thanks to all three of you for being part of this today. Obviously, you've each done so many wonderful things for hockey in our country. One question that you might mull over, we'll get to bring Adrian back for the Q&A, but when we have a chance, just wondering your thoughts on how hockey differs today from when you were first engaged in the game back, whenever that might have been. It all will vary with you, so you can mull that one over. But let's bring Adrian back in now, and she'll take us through the Q&A portion of today's call. Adrian?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the 1 key on your touchtone telephone. The first question is from Carly Peters from USA Hockey.
Hi, you guys. This is more for Mike and Eddie. Just wondering, you both cover some of the brightest young American stars in the NHL, including Parisi and Kane, and just wondering if you can comment on how you've seen fans across the country react to this new generation of U.S. players and, you know, how it differs from how fans might have followed them in years past.
Since Kane's younger, you get to go first, Eddie.
I respect, and I will take orders from my superior. I appreciate that.
Oh,
you know what, Carly? I think that over the years and with the exposure of NBC and then Versus, and even back in the day when Doc was with ESPN, is that I think it's so important. And I try to, and I know we try, Doc and I think I can speak for Doc on this, is that we really try to emphasize is that, you know, what if a kid is from Buffalo, New York, or, you know, a kid is from Minneapolis or Los Angeles. A young kid was drafted in the first round by the Nashville Predators a couple of years ago. Jonathan Blumey was on Team USA at the World Juniors this year in Ottawa. I mean, he's a kid that grew up in Los Angeles, played in the Western Hockey League with the Vancouver Giants. I think it's just so important that we continue to make mention of players of where they're from. And I will say this, is that the players, with the opportunity these players to get, all players in our sport, is that we are where we are today because of the players that have come before. And it's the players that are here now or the players that built it up. And then you look back to the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, and all those players have really built it up. And it's, you know, to get a chance to see these guys play. I get a chance to see Patrick Kane play on a nightly basis. The other night I was in New Jersey with Doc for a Versus game, Rangers and Devils, and Zach Parise is a superstar in this league. I mean, this guy, talking about work and compete, hockey sense, and Lou Lamoriello, who's the president, CEO, and GM of the New Jersey Devils, happened to be just a quick little story. He happened to be my sports festival coach back in 1983 when I was trying out to make the 1984 U.S. Olympic hockey team. Mr. Lamarulla was our coach for Team East, and he took all the young guys. He took the youngest guys that were there available, David A. Jensen, Al Iafrady. He had all the young guys on his team, and Lou is such an important part of the USA Hockey. And talking to him about Zach Parise, and I think this just sums it up, he not only has great hockey sense, but he has great common sense. And to me, that's all about upbringing, teaching the game, and obviously it's in the blood with his dad, JP, who is this, you know, the general manager and coach of the Des Moines Buccaneers in the United States Hockey League, another feeder for hockey players here in the States. And, you know, those are just two of a handful of guys that are just premier players that people are – they're stop-and-watch guys, and it's been a long time, and we've had them. We've had them in this league before, you know, from the Joey Mullins to the Brian Leeches, the Mike Richters, the Pat LaFontaines, Chris Chelios still, that, you know what, they're stop-and-watch, and it's important that as broadcasters in this country is that when we are doing these games – regardless of where they're from, and sometimes you hear guys with names that are tough to pronounce, that, hey, you know what, this guy is, you know, was born in Chicago, or this guy was born in Buffalo or in Detroit. To me, it's very important that we continue to do our job and our due diligence on a nightly basis, that we tell people, you know, where these kids are from. And you know what, it opens up young hockey players' eyes and say, you know what, hey, you know, if a guy from, you know, like when I was growing up in Chicago, I mean, Bobby Janicek, whose son plays in the USHL with the Sioux City Musketeers, I mean, Bobby Janicek was one of the first guys and one of the first American goalies to make it to the National Hockey League. And when I used to tell people I was from Chicago and I wanted to play hockey, and this is people outside of Chicago, and they look at you like, you know, like sometimes my kids look at me like I have seven heads when I tell them to eat their vegetables and take their vitamins, is that, look, you know what, it doesn't happen. It didn't happen, but now because of the doors that have been opened, the more exposure, the more opportunity that USA Hockey has allowed a lot of these young guys, that's why we're having so many more players. But I think it's really important that we emphasize where these kids have grown up and where they played to really build this game up.
Taking over there from the former forward on the diaper line, isn't that what they called you guys in 84? Who was on that line?
You're breaking up a little bit, Doc, when you said the diaper line.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Pat LaFontaine and David A. Jensen, that was the diaper line.
How old were you guys?
Patty was a year older, so Patty was 18. David A. was just about to be 18, and I was 17.
Wow.
Yeah,
anyway,
a long time ago.
Yeah. Gee, I didn't realize Lou Lamoriello had a hand in all of this.
Oh, yeah, Lou was great, and he's always been – there aren't many people. You learn, Doc, as you know, because you get a chance to see Mr. Lamarulo on a daily basis. And you know, there are people that just go about their business and don't want any credit for a lot of it. But he does so much, not only for the community and for the New Jersey Devils, but just for USA Hockey and behind the scenes. Somebody that I'm sure USA Hockey leans on in a lot of different situations, whether it was Craig Patrick over the years, Larry Plow here in St. Louis right now getting ready for the Hawks and Blues, Brian Burke, of course, and Mr. Lamarillo being right, you know, kind of being that foundation and that pillar behind USA Hockey. So, but he had a big hand, and I guess he knew something when he took a lot of those young guys, and a lot of us were lucky enough to play in the National Hockey League for a long, long time.
Yeah, well, you're in there for a game with the Blues, and here we have Boston and New Jersey. And tonight, I mean, you look ahead. The women's competition begins a year from today, and the men, what, a year from Monday, I think. And you look at Boston's goalie, Tim Thomas, is from near Flint, Phil Kessel, Zach Parise, Paul Martin, and you can actually pick some other players, too, who would be considered for the U.S. team. And there'll be quite a base of players from which to choose. I'm not saying that was always the case because you had to kind of judge. You were taking a lot of guys that were collegians because there weren't many U.S.-born players in the NHL, and they weren't allowed to come anyway because they were considered professionals. But I mean, even Scott Clemenson, the goaltender, is out of the U.S. League, out of Des Moines, Iowa, the only NHL player to ever come from the state of Iowa, and he has been a part of keeping the fire going for the Devils all this season long. We're lucky to have Zach Parise not only for the skill that he brings, the excitement level and the energy that he has, but also from the kind of person that he is. I know we say this a lot, and I know it becomes hackneyed, but believe me, it is no less sincere. We are blessed with some of the best people playing this sport, that you can imagine any sport being having the good fortune to have. They are high-quality people. Look you in the eye. They'll answer your question. Unless it's going to hurt their team, then they've got to be careful. But by and large, they are people that are very direct and honest and willing to help promote the game, sit down and talk to you about it rather than rushing off somewhere to a waiting limousine.
Well, thanks so much.
Kevin, I'm going to jump in here, Adrian, just for a second and ask the guys that I've had a chance to mull this over. And, Kevin, maybe you can start just in your perspective of how hockey differs today from in the U.S. from when you were first engaged in the game, whenever that was.
Well, it's really changed dramatically, Dave. And just to follow up with what Doc said, I mean, if you look in the 1980s when Team USA tried to compete in the the Canada Cup, essentially they had to take whoever was an American player and try to make a team out of them. They did not have a large pool. And there was always a shortage of goal scorers at that in the 80s. There were some pretty good defensemen led by Chris Chelios, but they didn't have power forwards, and they didn't have just enough depth to compete with the top countries around the world. And here we fast forward ahead, and some very fine players are not going to make the 2010 Olympic team. Just the pool has expanded, and I think the sort of the attitude about American players has changed. When I first started covering the league, it was still a bit of a novelty, American player, American college player. I mean, it wasn't until after the 1980 Olympic team that Americans were really given the opportunity. I remember Mark Johnson told me that prior to the 80 Olympics, he was offered a three-way contract. Now, we're all familiar with two-way contract, where you get paid one amount of money in the minors and one in the NHL. But a three-way contract was, we'll pay you one amount if you make the highest minor league. If you get a little lower than that, we're going to give you even less money. And I think that sort of speaks volumes about what they thought of American players. But that 80 team sort of changed the perspective. And I've always felt that team has been miscast as Mike Ruzzioni being the embodiment of it. Mike was really the only guy who didn't go into the NHL. But even though he scored the big goal, there were a lot of premium players on that team. And I think that's sort of one of the myths of the 80 team, that it was ragtag college players who overachieved, when in fact down center ice they had Mark Johnson and Pavlich and Broughton, who were all pretty darn good NHL players, and they had Ramsey and Christian on defense. So I think that team changed the outlook for the American player. And I think the other big change is just hockey in America. Eddie and I grew up in hockey areas. I grew up in Detroit. Eddie was in Chicago, and of course Doc was out of Indiana, which isn't a hockey area, but he had the IHL. But now we're into a lot more non-traditional markets, and people are talking about hockey in places they never talked about it before. And I remember Doc brought up a 92 Olympic games and Ray LeBlanc. What I remember about that was a quote. Art Berglund, who of course was heavily involved in USA Hockey and was team general manager, as I recall, of that team. He said that day after Ray LeBlanc had played a tremendous game in net, he said, there are more people who know in our country who know Ray LeBlanc's name than know Brian Leetch's name. And the point of all that is that hockey hadn't expanded to the point where it was big enough to have a sort of a national perspective, but the Olympics were. And I think today, though there's still a lot of work to be done, I think hockey has a much better foothold in this country than they had back there. So I would say those are the two major differences.
Eddie, how would you characterize the differences from when you were growing up playing till today?
Oh, boy. More rinks, which is a great thing. Yeah. More opportunity. Doc, hit it on the head with people and volunteers that allow a lot of young people an opportunity to play our game. And I've had a couple boys come through the USA Hockey program and be at the different camps that they've had. I've got a young son that's a Pee Wee hockey player, so I've kind of seen it come full circle over the last 15 years, 16 years of getting involved. But to me, I just don't think that people realize of how quickly the game has grown in our country and all the people that give of their time, and whether it's you know, being a manager or a jersey taker or somebody that goes out and helps these kids, it's something that I think has really changed and has helped. And, you know, Kevin was talking about the players that have allowed the opportunity with the guys, especially off that 80 team that were great players. I mean, unbelievable players from the Neil Broughtons and the Mark Johnsons, or a guy like, you know, Mike Ramsey, who just was as good at defensively as there was at that time. I mean, I just, you know, a lot of people didn't know him. I mean, it wasn't fancy. It was just old-time fashion type of hockey and shot blocker and being physical. And you think about the players that came after. I mean, Tommy Barrasso, who is now with Carolina, is doing a great job, you know, in the goaltending aspect of coaching. And Phil Housley was an unbelievable player. And it just opened up more doors. And I think now with the more rinks, the more volunteers, and the more opportunities for young hockey players, it's going to bode well for the numbers. And Kevin's exactly right. I mean, it used to be, well, you know, wow, an American in the NHL, it was like, you know, it was like stop the presses. It was, you know, it was unbelievable. And you're getting kids now from, like I said earlier, Jonathan Blum, a kid from Los Angeles, or you're getting kids from Texas, or, you know, it is Scotty Clemenson from Iowa, or, you know, kids from Chicago or Detroit. I mean, you've always heard of Minnesota and the Boston guys, but it's something that I think it's just really gotten bigger, and I think it's become better. And, you know, again, trying to do fundraisers in Chicago and to try to help, it's like anything else, and especially with the way the economy is now and ice time is just so, you know, just so, I don't even know if fragile is the right word, but it's so expensive and it's just so tough to get that it's just important that rinks allow kids that opportunity. I used to call it rat hockey when I was growing up in Niles, Illinois. I used to be able to go to the rink, pay the $2, go out there and throw a puck out there, and whether you were 8 years old, you had to fight for your ice time with you know, guys who were really old at 22 or 23 at that time for me. So I just think that it's really evolved and become something, you know, much bigger, and I think it's, you know, has a lot to do with the people involved and, of course, with the leadership of USA Hockey.
Doc, anything strike you from when you started in this journey till today and how it's changed?
Yeah, and growing up years in Indiana, and this was half a century ago, there were two arenas in the state, and they both had pro teams. The Indianapolis Chiefs, who played out of the fairgrounds in Indianapolis, and the Fort Wayne Comets, who still play out of the same place that's been wildly refurbished and is wonderful at the Coliseum. But it was that story pretty much as they were indicating elsewhere. Wire screens were above the board. So I'm really dating myself, and probably I should just wheel myself out of here after I hang up. But that was the situation. It wasn't that long ago, but it was sort of archaic. But the one consistent thing that has been going on, there were youth programs just getting started around Fort Wayne and Indianapolis. And now, of course, they're all over that state. And Kevin and I both had the pleasure of working in a town north of Detroit called Port Huron, where every year they have a Silver Stick hockey tournament that brings some of the best players from Skinny Atlas, New York, San Diego, California, every part of Canada conceivable. Wayne Gretzky, as a little tot, went through those doors of that same arena, and they've already had their tournament this year. It's an annual thing, and that's one of the consistencies. Despite all of the change that we've seen in the sport, and the athletes get bigger because of better nutrition, better equipment, there is a similarity at the grassroots level in that they have to learn the basics. The horn sounds to end their shifts when they're tots because they can't be left out there for over a minute. Sometimes that horn could be well improvised by coaches in the NHL when somebody stays out too long. But I think maybe some of those players are now not in the NHL anymore and playing over in Europe. But at any rate, I think that is one of the things that hasn't changed. However, the one thing that I notice most of all is the exposure that athletes now get that are growing up in the United States through the technological changes that we've had, where there is so much information about virtually any team, any college team, any USHL team. Eddie Olczyk has gone back to the hotel at night after afternoon games and has been able to watch one of his sons play on his computer for a USHL team, has been able to watch him take the warm-up to see what kind of a warm-up he has. This was unheard of before. You had to wait until a score flipped along on a news wire years ago, but now the information is so quickly, and we can get all kinds of statistical reports and plus-minus on games being played everywhere, and they aren't even pro games. They aren't even college games. They can be like high school kids playing. There's a lot more information, and so I don't think with this enormous talent pool we're going to have going to Vancouver, I don't think anybody's going to be overlooked. I think what's going to happen is they're going to run out of spots for a lot of guys because the exposure for players in the United States is so great now thanks to technology.
All right, guys, thanks very much. Adrian, bringing you back in, I didn't mean to take up so much time there. Sorry, guys, if anybody has any further questions.
The next question is from Rachel Brady from CTB.
Hi, guys. I have sort of a two-part question about the women's program. I wondered what your thoughts are on the hiring of Mark Johnson to the women's program and maybe your memories of what he was like as a player and what he'll bring to the women's program, and then also maybe your reflections on how the women's program has changed since 98 and really the leadership from Cami Granato on down now to the sort of new generation and how someone like Angela Ruggiero, for instance, was the youngest player in 98 and now she'll, you know, could very well be the oldest in 2010.
Kevin, why don't we start with you?
Well, that's a lot to start. I guess I'll start with, my reflections. I covered the early world championships with the women's team and frankly, the level of competition was not very good then, just the level of skating. And what I noticed by the time they had gotten to the Olympics in 1998, how dramatically everybody had improved. I mean, everybody was a terrific skater, and they'd handled the puck better. And Cami Granato and Karen Bai, to me, were two pioneers that probably sort of laid the groundwork for the top players in the U.S. today. I mean, they were dominant players early in the women's competition, and they were probably their skills were more refined than a lot of their colleagues on their own team and around the country. And I think America got excited by the fact that they were sort of on an equal footing with Canada when this all started, because I think there were just as many people, young women, playing in the U.S. as in Canada. I may be wrong on that, but there was a sense that they were on even footing, and I think everybody got excited by that. And with regard to Mark Johnson, I've known him for a number of years, and what I like is that it keeps one of the finest hockey families, the tradition of the Johnson family. Of course, Bob Johnson is Mark's father, and he's a former Olympic coach and, really one of the great coaches in American history. And what sort of unifies the Johnson family is, their love and passion for the game. Mark grew up, playing hockey with his dad in a weekly hockey game where they would put the Russian jerseys on rival players and pretend they were playing the Russians, because Badger Bob loved international competition as well. And he learned, I think, a lot from Bob Johnson. And I think he could have easily gone into men's hockey. He could have gone to the NHL route, but Mark has chosen to stay with the women's game because I think he loves it, and I think he realizes he's making an impact. And I think this was a tremendous choice for the U.S. team, and a very logical one in my opinion, because he understands the international game, he understands women's hockey, and he has passion for it. I hope that answers your question.
That's great.
Doc?
I've had the good fortune to sit down with a microphone and talk to Bob Johnson and Mark, different times, 25 years apart. And the best time, of course, is after the lights go off and the mic is put away, and then you can stand around and talk about other things that just come to your head that you think a regular audience wouldn't be in. And you get the same feeling, even though they're different people, of course, in talking to Mark in the direct eye-to-eye contact, and you can sense as you look through the passion for the sport and wanting it to succeed in the United States that both of them had. That's something that's been passed down from the father to the son. I think it's a wonderful choice in addition to the fact that Mark just isn't a name. He earned his stripes by going into the women's ranks of college hockey, coaching, winning a national championship, getting close a couple of times. I mean, there's some real powerhouses in the United States. And, of course, Shannon Miller, who coached Team Canada in 98, has a wonderful program. They're the defending champs now at the University of Minnesota Duluth. And Mark has had some wonderful Canadian and American players on his team. So he will have seen some of the kids he's going to be going up against, and perhaps they even played for him. But he's immersed in the women's hockey, and I can't think of a better representative. There are some terrific coaches across the United States who coach women's hockey, but I think Mark was the choice this year to lead this group of people. I think the other thing, too, that strikes me, and we've been talking about change a lot, Rachel, is the fact that we look ahead to this a year from today when the first games are going to be played out at UBC and also downtown. And I'm glad that Canada and the United States are in separate pools, because that preserves at least some of the drama. In women's hockey, those are always the dramatic games. As it turned out, it was an anticlimax that never came about in Torino, because the U.S. was beaten by Sweden. But I think the one thing that we always look forward to are those games that always seem to mean so much to the world of women's hockey. You have Canada, which just dominated for years and has won the last two, and convincingly. And the most impressive women's performer I think I've ever seen is a Canadian named Wickenheiser. My goodness, she can play. And so I'm looking forward to seeing her and to see how the U.S. can handle her and her teammates. I guess it's a year away. I guess I got to calm down.
Abby?
Well, I think just the how women's hockey has evolved and become such an important part for a lot of young women, and giving them the opportunity. I mean, they fall in love with the greatest game in the world, and give them an avenue to play. And it has become just so popular. And you know, and knowing Cammy Granato very well, and really, you know, when you think about the United States, you know, the first family of hockey, with all the success that the Granato family has had. Not only internationally with Tony, of course, now the head coach of the Colorado Avalanche, but Tony's opportunities with USA Hockey and playing in National Hockey League for many years, and of course Cammy just being the face of women's hockey, and just for young women to be able to look up to and to dream, as I did as a young boy growing up in Chicago, to think about playing in the Olympics, in playing and representing their country at all different venues. And, of course, talk about women's college hockey and the great job that Mark has done at Wisconsin. I think it's an outstanding choice to let him be the one to lead the women's team coming up. And he's had so much success. I mean, his dad, I got a chance to play for in a couple Canada Cups way back when in the early 80s. And, you know, with Badger and his passion, as Doc had said, it certainly is – the apple hasn't fallen too far from the tree when it talks about the passion of Mark Johnson. And think about the phrase from Badger, you know, it's a great day for hockey. And regardless of men's or women's or, you know, teenage boys or girls, it is just, you know, that family just goes hand in hand with USA Hockey. And it's going to be real exciting to watch both the men and women take battle, and that's what it will be when any time that that USA, and especially with, you know, going up against Canada, and I know for me, any time that we would, I mean, that would be the barometer. And I heard Kevin talking about it a little bit earlier. It's, you know, how do you compare against our friends from the north? And a lot of these players, both men and women, will have played with for a long time on their teams, whether it be at college or in the National Hockey League. They'll be going head to head, and with how diverse that you know, our game is and worldwide it is you're going to have a lot of guys and women going up against each other in the biggest stage a year from now. But women's hockey has just come so far, and I think it's gone hand in hand with the way that just, you know, hockey has grown in our country.
I think one quick story, if I may, personalizing one of the U.S. female players, Angela Ruggiero. She was over at Harvard one day, and that was her school. She dropped by Harvard one day, and there was a practice going on. It was a men's practice, and a guy named Orr was there watching, who happened to be around Boston a lot in the previous 30 years. And they struck up a conversation, and she said, "You're over here watching the men. Why don't you come to one of our games? I think you'll see something really impressive." And he said, well, okay. So they had an afternoon game scheduled the next day, and Angela is a large person with a great personality who doesn't know a stranger. Her teammates, I think, nicknamed her the governor, which is also a nickname Eddie Olczyk once had for the same reason. And during the course of the game, she let go a shot that was Orr-like, that ricocheted off the crossbar, went up into the seats. I think Bobby Orr realized that his invitation was well-placed because he had indeed seen something. This is probably the finest athlete in terms of women's hockey that the United States has had. They've had wonderful athletes in the past who have given of themselves for the game and all of that. But to see that kind of skill, as I'd mentioned earlier with Haley Wickenheiser, I think that's another thing we can look forward to with these Olympics coming up. Sorry I jumped in there.
Oh, glad you did, Doc.
I'm showing no further questions at this time.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thanks very much, and certainly our thanks to Doc Emmerich, Kevin Allen, and Eddie Olczyk for participating today. Enjoy Hockey Weekend across America, and certainly a lot to look forward to with the Olympics just about a year away. Anything you need immediately, feel free to call here in the office, 719-538-1171. Thanks again, and have a great day.
Thank you, Dave. Thanks, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes the program. You may now disconnect.